Wood Green, which is a sitting down one, and I go there every month if I can. And this is so different. I just like the mobility, the heath, and I get more of a voice at this group, because there are one or two people in my group who are very nice, but I feel they sort of dominate the group.
Do you know, I really like that. Okay, the idea of the
sitting down.
Sitting down book club and walking book
yes,
club.
Yes, with a few glasses of wine, of course, and very two nibbles there, but it's quite different, but it's very nice, yeah. Yeah.
Lovely to talk to you, thank you.
Thank you. In fact, the weather kept fine.
Yes. Yes.
It was a really good day. We come over from Tottenham with Green.
Oh, so yeah. Here, and are you a Spurs fan? Is that when you say go to football?
Right. Yes.
We're coming back towards the high road and very near to the bookshop. And we haven't walked that far and certainly haven't worked up a sweat, but we've walked for far enough for people to really feel that they have discussed the book and they have given their brain some exercise as well as their body. And I have to say, I think this is a brilliant idea. And if anyone listening has the motivation to say, I want to do that, I want to start a walking book club, then do, because I can see on the people's faces around how much this matters to them, how much it brings to their life, and how much fun it is. And it's different.
I'm going to say thank you all so much for coming. I think we slightly decided maybe Mrs. Palfrey should have joined the walking book club.
Yeah.
And then she would have been okay.
Yeah. Thank you.
Claire Balding with the Walking Book Group in West London. And Claire continues her search for self-improvement next week near Hay-on-Wye. Ramblings was produced by Lucy Lunt. Now on BBC Radio 4, it's Farming Today this week with Charlotte Smith, looking at the impact that the proposed HS2 will have on farmers, landowners and wildlife.
The actual proposed route comes across Arley Brook, Tabby Brook, which is at the very bottom of our property. It then comes on a viaduct over the brook all the way up through our fields. It passes to the left-hand side of the oak tree you can see in front of you, and the marker I put in the field there is so that you can see how close it comes to the farmhouse, and it will totally take the farmhouse out.
Well, good morning. I'm in Cheshire this morning in what is currently a muddy, tree-lined field, but as you've heard, will be the rail track for High Speed 2. I'm with John Kelleher and Pat Mather, who currently own this land. John, watching you describe where it will come, I can tell that for you, this is an appalling prospect.
Absolutely devastating. The family have farmed this land for over 60 years.
Well, today we're going to look at all the arguments, both against and in favour of HS2. We're in the village of Pickmere, which will be very much affected by the proposed route. But we'll also be hearing from other people who say that the country needs HS2. John, it's difficult for people in your situation, whose lives will be completely changed by this line. But can you see that for the country as a whole, we need this sort of infrastructure?
No, I don't think we do need this. George Osborne has said that this will kickstart the economy, but this will take 20 years before it's actually functioning. And I believe that if we need to kickstart the economy, which we obviously do in the current recession, that money should be invested now in the economy to hopefully boost jobs now, not in 20 years' time.
So as I say, John, we're in your muddy field. What do you currently do on this land? How big is your farm?
What we do at the moment is mixed farming. We have a farm gate egg business. We finish sheep for the butcher. And we also run a riding pony breeding stud.
And it's a very pretty place, Pickmere, isn't it? Pat, how long have you been in the village? What's it like?
Well, I was born in Pickmere, been here most of my life. You have friends and you've got people that you can rely on if there's a problem. If we had to move from here, it'd just be, it's bad enough to move a house. How do you move a farm.
We're describing pretty much a rural idyll, but people will have noticed that you're also under a flight path. We're not that far from a large motorway. Is it really that much to give up?
You're talking about us giving up our life, our history here. This is our little bit of England. You know, we've worked hard on this land. To ask us to go away somewhere else and start again is so totally unfair.
Well, we'll hear more from both John and Pat later in the programme. But let's look at why Britain, it said, needs HS2. Proposals for this route were unveiled by the Chancellor last week. Now, it'll run from London to Birmingham, that's phase one, and then in two sections go north to Leeds and Manchester. The cost is an estimated £33 billion, and it will take 20 years to complete. So what benefits will it bring? Dr. Pat Conlon is a transport economist from the University of Birmingham, and he told me why the time was right.
We're experiencing quite a renaissance in the level of rail travel. And it's expected that level of traffic is expected by rail is expected to grow substantially in the future. It's growing because we've got, well, basically an increase in population. At the same time, there's a shortage of capacity. Our ability to move them, especially on the main lines, the West Coast main line and the East Coast main line.
Would it not be enough simply to improve the main lines which already exist and maybe put faster or longer trains on them?
Well, there are two problems with that, actually. There's a very limited amount you can do to actually increase the capacity of those lines because of they're not straight, not completely straight. And to get high speed, you've got to have a dedicated track where the track is pretty straight for long stretches.
The other thing that many people point to when we're talking about high-speed travel is if, given the advances in technology that we're seeing, we will really need to travel so much. For instance, we are talking to each other, we're not in the same city, but we would be perfectly able to hold a meeting like this with one in Birmingham and one in London. Why would we need to travel in the future?
The rise in telecommunications of various sorts has actually been accompanied by an increase in demand for travel. This has been seen most readily in the form of air travel. Telecommunications has not actually reduced the need or the desire for business travel by air, but has actually tended, if anything, on balance to increase it.
So does all that outweigh the objections of people who say that this will radically alter their lives, it will have a huge impact on the landscape? Does the need outweigh that impact?
This country is a little bit lopsided in its level of economic activity. There's a north-south divide in the level of economic activity, just as there is in things like house prices. Faster links between north and south, that the possibility exists, the strong possibility of this is it will rebalance the economy and take a little bit of the pressure off the London and South East region. Why this is a very difficult political decision is that the benefits of this line are going to be spread thinly over large sections of the population. But some individuals, and rather a relatively small number of people who happen to live in the countryside of a county like Buckinghamshire or Staffordshire, are going to suffer very intensely as a result of this.
Dr. Pat Conlon there. Well, for major projects like railways and motorways, the land and housing in the way is compulsorily purchased by the government or the company involved. The government's issued a consultation document on compensation for the first phase of HS2. It proposes buying and leasing back 338 residential properties, which would need to be demolished, and properties within 120 metres of the route will also qualify for compensation. That will increase for houses within 60 metres of the line. They'll be offered the value of their homes at pre-route announcement market value, plus an extra 10%. And as well as that, a long-term hardship scheme will be available to help those who need to move during the development but are unable to sell their homes. Well, Anna asked Liz Hurst, head of property at HS2, if people were, despite all this, going to lose out.
What we're doing at the moment is contacting every farmer along the route to do a farm impact survey. We know that farmers have complicated businesses. We see them as the custodians of the landscape, and it's not in our interests as a project to buy up more land than we actually need in order to build the railway. In fact, what we're trying to do is make sure that we retain as much land in productive use as we possibly can.
But what land does get taken, though, will you be paying the going rate for the land and compensate the farmer for the amount of disruption it causes at the time and beyond? Because running a business afterwards, farmers say, will make it more difficult and cost more to run their business afterwards.
The experience of the High Speed 1 project was that, having listened to farmers and talked to individual farmers and farm managers about the impacts on their business, that we were able to do land swaps, we were able to arrange access so that farm machinery could get to parts of farms, and we were able to offer fair compensation. I'm sure the government is taking all of that experience into account.
Liz Hurst there from HS2. Well, according to the Country Land and Business Association, the whole compensation system is fundamentally unfair and needs reform. Andrew Shirley is the CLA's chief surveyor.
The problems are, very simply, that the whole of the compulsory purchase system is about making things easy for the acquirer and paying the landowner or the business operator the minimum. And, you know, the government's consultation on compensation for HS2 really was against that background. It helped in some issues. So it may have helped perhaps for a little bit easier access for householders, but not really for people that operate rural businesses. What we want is a system that actually compensates people properly for their loss, rather than the system we've got at the moment, which enables the acquirer to pay as little as possible.
Well, the government would say that actually they're doing more than the law expects them to do.
Yes, but you're dealing with a law that is very old and should have been reformed many years ago. And, you know, what the government needs to do is take this opportunity to prepare a proper compulsory purchase scheme that actually achieves the aims of building the infrastructure, whatever infrastructure that is, but actually properly compensating the landowner and the business for their real loss.
Andrew Shirley there from the Country Land and Business Association talking to Anna. Well, no minister from the Department of Transport was able to give us an interview about this, but a spokesman said that they believe both the process for compulsory purchase and the compensation code are inherently fair. They say they're based on statute and case law, which ensures laws do adapt to changing circumstances. The government is considering the CLA's report and will reach its conclusion shortly. So the rowback compensation is continuing, and for you, you hope the discussion about where or if phase two of HS2 will go ahead is also still going to continue.
Yes, very much so. I think there's a long journey ahead of us. We personally are now in limbo for 3 years because the consultation period, and then they're going to draft the Act of Parliament, and we won't be able to do anything until after the Royal Assent. So, yeah, we're going to keep fighting.
Well, John and Pat, thank you very much for having us here this morning. Now, we've been talking so far this morning about Phase 2 of HS2. Phase 1, which runs from London to the West Midlands, was announced some 3 years ago, so those living on the route have had some time to get used to the idea of Britain's fastest train running across their land, or in some cases, through the front door and out of the back. John Barnes farms near Lichfield in Staffordshire. HS2 will demolish all his farm buildings, which he's built up into a wedding business, a farm shop and holiday accommodation. He told Melvin Rickaby he has great sympathy for those farmers like John and Pat who've just received their bad news.
When we got the letter, I couldn't really believe it, and I suspect they'll be feeling the same. Disbelief. It's all suddenly getting a bit real.
We're walking up a grassy rise now through a flock of fluffy white sheep. So if we turn back and look down into the valley, across a kind of patchwork landscape of fields, and I think, is that the M6
yes,
toll
over
there?
Yes, see the M6 toll. We're looking down at the farmyard, farmhouse, the wedding venue, the Dutch barns, corn stores, potato stores, all our buildings. The railway is actually cutting straight through the lot, and it's what they call as business extinguishment.
That sounds a bit terminal, to be honest. It does, but that is
the case.
You've really been living under the shadow of HS2 for a full year now. What has it been?
We've had, I think, 14 visits from HS2 now, doing their soil surveys, crayfish surveys, vole surveys, bird surveys, bat surveys, sound surveys, you name it, we've had it.
And is any of this to decide whether the route's appropriate and to possibly change the route?
No, the route won't be changed. It's basically for the environmental impact. And the HS2 have recognised the fact that the farm will become unviable, because obviously compensation is the big key for us now, and we just don't know at this stage how that will be.
OK, well, let's take a wander back down through the sheep, down to the farm.
Yeah.
So we've reached the farmyard now. Behind us here, the Georgian farmhouse. So let's just take a seat on the bench here, John, and have a look at this map, which you received this week, which is the working drawings of where the line's going to go.
We're actually in a deep cutting here.
So we've got the narrow railway running left to right, and then either side of that a big chunk of land being taken away.
Absolutely, yeah.
But on either side of this, you've got your land on either
side.
We
have, yeah, absolutely.
Are you going to carry on farming it?
At the moment we're going to, but we shan't have any facilities to do it from unless we can get planning permission to rebuild on another part of the farm.
For those farmers who've just got the news in the last 10 days or so, there's a long way for them to go before.
Very few words of comfort for them, I'm afraid. It is a long haul, and it's like the sword of Damocles waiting to come down on you. But, you know, if there is an infrastructure project, they've got to compensate us properly.
So when you're looking at compensation, have you managed to factor everything in?
The buildings, they're relatively easy to value, I think. The business, that's generally based on profitability. So we've tried to keep making a reasonable profit. We've employed the lawyers, we've employed the land agents at a cost, I have to say, trying to work out what the business is worth.
To this point, how much do you think it's cost you in terms of loss of business, employing people to look into the compensation side of things?
Loss of business is a difficult one to quantify. It's brought business to the farm shop to a degree because people are interested in what we're doing. The wedding business is a more difficult one to quantify. At the moment, we're going to continue until we know exactly what the situation will be.
How are you feeling about all of this?
Incredibly sad a lot of the time, but at the same time we've got to keep our heads up because we've got weddings, we've got the farm shop, so we've got to be upbeat as we can. But within the family, we go through quite a lot of trauma.
John Barnes in Staffordshire speaking there to Melvin Rickaby. Well, the south of England has some experience of building and living with a high-speed rail route. HS2's predecessor, with clues in the name, it's called HS1, runs through Kent, linking London with the Channel Tunnel. It was fully opened in 2007, so 6 years on, what impact has it had? Joe James is Chief Executive of the Invicta Kent Chamber of Commerce.
Oh, I think it's made a huge difference to us here in Kent. We've been looking at a rail situation that's affected our county in a fairly profound way now for must be nearly 20 years. We've gone through no end of changes here, but at the end of the day, it has been very positive and beneficial for our county.
And yet, as you say, you've had many years of major disruption, and for many people in rural Kent, it has simply meant something zooming past them, maybe taking some of their land, ruining the view. Has it really had a beneficial effect across the county?
In any situation, there is obviously going to be winners and there's obviously going to be losers. So I'm looking at this from a business perspective on the overall economy. You know, some people have suffered in a way more than others. You know, such as any major construction project, you know, it can't be undertaken without having some negative effects. But for business, it's had a very positive impact. We've seen more businesses look at relocating into Kent. There's not just new businesses coming into Kent. You know, it's helped us retain businesses in our area.
This week we've heard from people affected by both stages of HS2, and some of them are very upset, very angry and very worried about the impact it will have. From your experience of HS1, what would you say to them?
Admittedly, Kent has the advantage of the existing transport corridors, and HS1 has largely followed those corridors. You know, but it's worth remembering, however, that, you know, new transport links have always got to break new ground. But, you know, you have to look long-term at these things. But if it proves to have a similar effect as that of HS1 to us in Kent, then I think they may find it beneficial in the longer term, and any associated disruption will be worth accommodating.
Jo James from the Invicta Kent Chamber of Commerce there. We've left the farm in Cheshire and I'm now in an ancient woodland in Staffordshire. It's absolutely beautiful here, even on a slightly damp morning. I'm dwarfed by trees, which I'm horrified to learn are actually younger than I am. This is part of the Whitmore estate and I'm here with the owner, Edward Cavanagh Mannering. Tell me about these trees then. Are they really only in their late 40s?
My father planted these trees in the late 60s, early 70s, and I can't put my arms around them to get the full circumference. They are some size.
This is ancient woodland. This has been here forever.
I've brought a picture of a map based at home. It's dated 1595, and very clearly the exact same boundaries of this wood are the same as they are today.
So where would HS2 on the proposed route at the moment go?
HS2 is coming diagonally through a block of land to our south, and then it branches straight into this wood, cuts it in half.
Which is obviously sad for the wood, but it's all in the name of progress, and you will, of course, get compensation.
I accept that it's in a national interest, and it is the best route as judged by the government's own guidelines, then personally I'd have to accept that line, and then I'd switch over to some form of compensation for land loss, and in particular really a remedial work to allow us to continue farming. If it's in a national interest, we'll go with it. But I mean, we only knew about this a few days ago, and the whole thing is fairly overwhelming. When you look on a map, you think, I wonder where it's going this morning. Much to your horror, you realise that it's going through the middle of your farm.
Right on cue, we have a train on the West Coast Main Line, which is just to the side of us. You can see it streaking past with its red livery there. It's not as if you're not used to the idea of trains.
When the West Coast was built, that cut a piece of the estate off. So we've been here before. Back then, it must have been catastrophic or intimidating, the whole idea of the steam train coming through. So we are used to a degree to the noise. That's a freight train.
Hence more noisy.
More noisy. I'm not against it per se. I think I come back to the national interest, the things that we have to, things move on. But it's at what cost, and has it been thought through, and is this the best line?
We've wandered down to be just by the little brook here. Also with us is David Cadman from Staffordshire Wildlife Trust. Because, David, you were saying that here you can see that this was an ancient woodland replanted rather than just woodland planted any old where. I'm looking, I can't see anything.
This part of the site, as I say, there's a number of plant species here starting to emerge as we move into spring. Bluebells, yellow archangel, wood sorrel, that are indicative of the ancient woodland status of the site.
As you're talking, I am looking down between my wellies. All I can see is sort of mulchy leaves, autumnal colours, and the odd bit of green. I don't actually see a bluebell. Oh, is that a bluebell there?
These are the bluebells just emerging now.
Oh, just coming out. Yeah, you can see them. If you pull the leaf debris away a bit, there's loads.
Absolutely. This is the yellow archangel as well. So in a few more weeks' time, we'll have the blue carpet of the bluebells, and intermingled between, we'll have the yellow flowers of the yellow archangel, and small white flowers of the wood sorrel as well.
And you wouldn't find that in just a woodland that had been planted in the 40s?
No. These plant species take a long time to colonise a site, so where you get huge swathes of them, you can generally tell that it is potentially of ancient woodland status.
So if, when this is destroyed by HS2, from what you're saying, it would be difficult to recreate somewhere else.
Something like this cannot be recreated within decades. This is seriously over centuries to get this sort of spread and diversity of botanical species.
We've talked a lot about the impact on people, the impact on farmers. What will be the impact of HS2 on wildlife?
In Staffordshire, it's likely to have a significant effect. It crosses a number of our local wildlife sites. which are the non-statutory protected sites in the county, and they support a range of habitats that are protected under the UK Biodiversity Action Plan. The woodland we're in at the moment with Edward, the ancient woodland, through to some of our wet grassland, across a number of watercourses, and some of our wildflower meadows. In terms of species, it's likely, certainly this northwestern part of the route is likely to affect otters, across to great crested newts and dormouse populations.
Can any or all of that be mitigated, either by developing a nature reserve somewhere else or by cuttings, tunnels, bridges, so on?
Potentially, but we're at the moment we haven't seen anything in terms of mitigation, in terms of the ratio of mitigation, lost habitat against habitat that's likely to be restored or created. So at the moment, all we can see is quite a bleak picture in terms of habitats and species for the county.
You mentioned protected areas. What are the rules if this is trying to go across something which is a site of special scientific interest or similar?
In Staffordshire, there's likely to be little SSSI affected by the route. What is likely to be affected are these local wildlife sites predominantly, which have no statutory protection as such. An awful lot of landowners that are in agri-environmental schemes work with the sites to positively manage them, to put them in appropriate conservation management. So in terms of statutory protection, there's actually very little.
We're obviously going to be talking about HS2 for many more years to come, but Edward, is your feeling that phase two of HS2 will go ahead? If not this exact route, then something pretty similar.
The impression I gain from specialist advice in London that it will come. It's a case of when. It's extremely hard to push it away from you, and in pushing it away from you, your neighbour will not thank you for that. To stand here now, it's peaceful, it's serene, it feels old. I know it's progress, but it makes me sad.
Thank you very much for your time this morning. That's it from us here in Staffordshire. Next week on Farming Today, we're looking at farm diversification. I'm Charlotte Smith. The producer was Ruth Sanderson.
Now, Radio 4, let's see if there's some cheer to be had.